This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ed Chu and I'm Chief of Medical Oncology here at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. My co-host, Dr. Ken Miller, is off today. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut. Each week, Ken and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center, and together we discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment availables to cancer patients, and the latest treatment advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help and hope. We will answer your questions and give you the latest information on cancer. If you would like to submit a question to us about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC, and we will try to answer your question on air in a future broadcast. And if you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you would like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are posted in audio and written formats on the Yale Cancer Center website at www.yalecancercenter.org. Today our program focuses on advances in the diagnosis and treatment of sarcoma, and our special guest is Dr. Gary Friedlander, the Wayne O. Southwick Professor and Chairman of Orthopedics, and an expert in the treatment of sarcomas here at the Yale Cancer Center. Gary, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Delighted to join you.
So Gary, let's get right into it. What exactly is sarcoma?
Let me back up for a moment, Ed. Our bodies are made up of wondrous groups of cells that are the building blocks for the tissues and organ systems of our body, the heart and blood vessels, the brain and the nerves, and the musculoskeletal system are examples, bones, muscles, tendons, joints. And these cells, these very important cells, have the capacity, fortunately, to heal when injured and to replace or replenish themselves as they wear out. Very, very important function. Occasionally, and for reasons we're just beginning to understand, some cells go haywire. They go berserk. They grow nasty, they become aggressive, and they have the ability to spread to other parts of the body. That's metastasis, and that's the core essence of cancer or malignancy, this ability to metastasize. Furthermore, cancers are generally divided into two major groups, carcinomas and sarcomas. Gets back to the cells that go berserk. Carcinomas are derived from epithelial cells. These are the cells that line body surfaces. On the outside, our skin. On the inside, the lining of our digestive tract, blood vessels, ducts of glands in the breast, the prostate, lungs, kidneys, similar types of situations. On the other hand, sarcomas are derived from supporting cells, the cells that help pull and hold our organ systems together. Bone, cartilage, ligaments, tendons, for example, muscles, fat. And so when a cell of bone, of cartilage, of ligament, muscle or fat goes berserk or haywire, these are referred to as sarcomas.
So Gary, so of all of these key supporting structures within the body, you know, which one seems to be most likely affected and will result in a cancer called sarcoma?
Cancers of the musculoskeletal system or sarcomas of the musculoskeletal system, tumors that start in those tissues, and maybe at some future date we could talk about tumors that come to the bone, which are far more common, these tumors in general are a small fraction of the overall burden of cancer on our society. So they don't happen frequently, But bone, cartilage, tendons, muscles, fat, all can turn malignant.
Can you give our listeners a sense as to, so each year here in the state of Connecticut, how many patients will actually be diagnosed with soft tissue sarcoma?
Let me start with bone, something I'm particularly fond of because I'm a musculoskeletal oncologist, I'm a trained orthopedic surgeon, and then I did some extra training in surgical oncology. A sarcoma of bone, the most common of which is called osteosarcoma, occurs roughly 1 out of 100,000 in the population each year. Connecticut, we have 3.3 million people, and we would expect to see 33 new cases of osteosarcoma a year, and that's the most common
heart tissue. And not to interrupt, but typically what's the age distribution for patients who present with this kind of bone cancer?
The sarcomas of the musculoskeletal system can happen in early life, very early life, under the age of 5, bone as well as soft tissue sarcomas, infants, toddlers, young children are susceptible to disorders, to malignancies like rhabdomyosarcoma, that is a sarcoma of skeletal muscle. They are susceptible to osteosarcoma at young ages, a primary tumor of bone, a cancer that starts in the bone. There's another variant of aggressive bone cancer called Ewing sarcoma in the young age group. And I'm talking about people under the age of 20 and often under the age of 10. We then get into middle age, and I remember middle age, where
I'm there.
and joyously, so I can tell, that are more likely to get chondrosarcomas, for example, in this list. And when we're talking about hard tissues, chondro means cartilage. Chondrosarcoma is a malignancy of cartilage. They're also prone to soft tissue sarcomas, such as fibrosarcoma, a support tissue sarcoma, or liposarcoma, a cancer that is related to fat or fat cells, lipomatous. And as we get a bit more mature, and here I'm getting closer to home, over 60, you start to see more of the soft tissue sarcomas and more of the metastatic tumors that come to bone. Hmm. Again, something that perhaps we'll get to at another time.
Sure. Now, so obviously you're describing really a pretty broad range of cancers in this family, but can you make any generalizations as to the main risk factors that we need to be aware of for developing this kind of cancer?
It could be an easy question, and I could say we really don't fully understand it. There are clearly associations environmentally with some cancers, lung cancers, for example, and mesotheliomas and asbestos, some very clear linkages. With bone and soft tissues, they're less clear at this point in time, but people like you are going to help us understand those in the future, and the groups that we work with at places like Yale are going to help sort that out. There's one perhaps minor example. There's a disorder of bone called Paget's disease, which in and of itself is benign but can be uncomfortable. The bone, for one reason or another, starts to be more active than normal. And people with that disease have an increased incidence of osteosarcoma later in life.
And what do we know about the genetic aspects of sarcomas?
I am sure that genetics is a very important part of the answer to your question. And we know of correlations between many cancers and many genetic abnormalities. We're sorting out which of those are cause and effect, which of those are closely related and which are innocent bystander relationships. There's this notion of the double hit phenomenon, again, just a hypothesis not proved, that would suggest that some people genetically are more prone to develop certain kinds of cancers than others, but then need to be exposed to some additional issue, perhaps in the environment, that allows the cancer to express itself. And these correlations are rapidly becoming more clear.
Now, there is some association or risk between individuals receiving radiation therapy and the development of sarcomas, isn't there?
Absolutely true. And what's even more interesting, there are some cancers that benefit from irradiation but have a higher incidence of developing a secondary cancer from radiation than just the effect of the radiation alone on someone who has a different disorder. Mm-hmm. So these linkages are very clearly present, and these stories are rapidly progressing, and I'm looking forward to the final chapters.
And I guess two of the cancers, at least that I'm aware of, would be breast cancer and Hodgkin's lymphoma, for which patients have gotten radiation therapy, gotten cured, and then many, many years later, unfortunately, developed a secondary malignancy, in this case, a sarcoma.
Sure, and as you know, the lymphomas and leukemias also have a similar disproportionately high change, if you will, or secondary cancer. And these secondary cancers often don't become apparent for 10 years or longer.
Okay, well, great. So at this point, I'd like to remind our listeners to email your questions to healthline@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this time, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about the treatment and diagnosis of sarcoma with our special guest, Dr. Gary Friedlander.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2006, over 11,000 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in Connecticut alone. Early detection is key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for the disease. Patients with colorectal cancer have more hope than ever before. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm in the WTIC studios with our guest, Dr. Gary Friedlander, one of the experts here at the Yale Cancer Center in the treatment and diagnosis of sarcomas. So, Gary, before the break, we were kind of going through some of the background relating to sarcomas in general, and I thought it would be probably important for you to maybe describe to our listeners what some of the common symptoms that are associated with sarcomas.
I'd be glad to. Very often they're subtle, but the two primary symptoms are pain and developing a lump.
Okay. So actually, it leads me to an interesting email that we have gotten from Brian from Manchester, who says, I recently noticed a lump on my back. It's about the size of a large marble. Is this something that should be taken seriously? My physician said that it was probably just a fatty deposit. Your thoughts, Gary?
The answer is yes, you should take it seriously, and yes, your primary care physician was probably right. The important thing is to bring this to the attention of your primary care provider and make good decisions. And the decision may be to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Now, suppose it continues to grow or continues to cause the symptoms of pain. What would be the next step, and what should be done in terms of trying to make a diagnosis of whether or not it's benign or, in fact, a real cancer?
First of all, the treatment, the care, the diagnosis, and the treatment of cancer is a team approach. That's what I really love about Yale and the ability to work with my colleagues. I'm a surgeon, but I need to work with my medical oncologists, colleagues like you. I need to work with the diagnostic imaging folks, the people that take MRIs and x-rays and bone scans, the pathologist, and the radiation oncologist. All of us work together, and you can enter this circle of colleagues at almost any point. I frequently have patients referred by primary care physicians with a lump, and there are two things that are on my mind. One is physically, biologically, is this benign or malignant? And secondly, the emotional overlay of the patient. We're telling people to be concerned about lumps. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's very important to prove something's benign, not just search out the malignancies.
Sure.
Another brief digression, we often use the word tumor amongst ourselves. To me, and I suspect to you, tumor is a lump. Mm-hmm. You can have a benign lump, and you can have a malignant lump. Benign tumors, malignant tumors. I'm delighted when I have an opportunity to tell somebody you have a benign tumor, and they're far more common than malignant tumors. Sorting it out is the challenge, and we do the things we were trained to do in medical school and our training. We listen to the patient, a history. We examine the individual, and there are clues. We get laboratory tests that help us decide something is or is not likely. And very frequently in my area, you get an x-ray, and then that may lead to other imaging like a CAT scan or an MRI. If there's still some question, a biopsy.
And with respect to biopsy, there's a needle aspirate, there's a real biopsy called, I guess, a true cut biopsy. You know, what are your thoughts as to, you know, what's the optimal test for diagnosing this disease?
You've picked a very important aspect of diagnosis, and one that I'm particularly passionate about. Biopsy, again, is taking a small and hopefully representative piece of tissue from the tumor, putting it on a slide so the pathologist and I can identify what's going on. How you get the biopsy is critical to how many options you have to treat the tumor later on, especially surgically. You have to put the biopsy needle, if you do it that way, in the right place so I can make an appropriate incision to take out the tumor. Or if you do, there are two biopsies. Let me back up a little bit. As you said, you can biopsy tissues with a needle, a special needle, some Novocaine and a special needle tends not to be too uncomfortable. And I can do it in the office, often the first time I see someone, and begin the process of answering the question immediately. It might take 2 or 3 days to get the result. Or there are times when it's better to do the biopsy in the operating room through a small incision. In either case, where you place that biopsy is critical to getting the right answer and not interfering with the ability to use some of our very special surgical procedures later on.
So again, the ideal person to kind of make that first diagnosis with a biopsy would be someone like yourself, the surgeon, who really has the skills and the experience to decide what's the most appropriate biopsy form to do.
So you're right. I'd like to put my ego aside, but highlight our training, if you will. And the person who does the biopsy is best the person who's going to do the definitive surgery or the remainder of the treatment.
Okay, so we have a diagnosis now of sarcoma. So take us through the next steps as to how you then approach this patient in this multidisciplinary fashion and then decide what's the best treatment strategy for a given individual.
Let me pick a bone sarcoma. As you know, I talk too much and I'm likely to run out of time. So let me talk about one of my favorites. The first thing is to share the information with the patient and their support system. I think it's very important to engage the individual so that they understand their own disease. And I've just seen that be helpful time and time again. It's a bad problem, perhaps, but the more they know about it, the better their information, the less anxious they're going to feel about the next steps. Then you have to activate the team. I have the advantage of being able to see in the hall, pick up the phone, walk next door, initiate the consults that I need with my colleagues in medical and radiation oncology. We caucus quickly, we develop a plan, and present it to the patient. The surgical part, let me concentrate on the surgical part, but for many tumors, we begin with chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. We want to stop the potential spread of that tumor, which is its biggest risk, and that's chemotherapy. But when it's my turn as a surgeon, we now have the ability to remove the diseased portion of the skeleton, as large as it may be, and replace it in one of several ways to avoid amputation.
Okay, great. And when you do this limb sparing procedure, and you remove the tumor, how does the bone get repaired?
There are two general approaches. First, I have to take the tumor out without seriously thinking about how am I going to put this back together, because job number one is to get the entire tumor out. We have a wonderful team here, and we're very good at doing that. Then the second operation begins, and that is putting things back together, and there are two general ways of doing it. One is there's some very generous people in our society that donate body parts in a very special manner. We're familiar with hearts, lungs, kidneys, liver donations, and some people also donate bones when they pass away. And we can use those bones, those special shaped bones, to replace what we've just removed. And the body will gradually heal and replace that bone with its own bone, and you wind up with a genuine GM part. Again, comes with a lifetime warranty.
And there's no problem with rejection of that bone?
There is a recognition by the body that these cells are foreign, but it does not interfere with the body's ability to heal and replace it. It is a bit different than a solid organ where the heart must continue to beat, the original heart that's transplanted, where the original kidney must function immediately. With bone, it is gradually replaced by your own bony structures, and that's a very important difference. So yes, the body recognizes it as foreign, but no, it does not reject it, and you don't need immunosuppression.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, at this time, I'd just like to remind our listeners to email your questions to healthline@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. Right now, we're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story, but please stay tuned to learn more information about the new treatment strategies for sarcoma with our guest, Dr. Gary Friedlander.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Milford.
My mother passed away last September after a recurrence of breast cancer. 3 weeks later, the results of an earlier biopsy came back as cancerous. Can you imagine my horror? My Yale-based gynecologist, Musa Spravanza, referred me to a wonderful surgeon at the Yale Breast Center, Donald Lannan. Dr. Spravanza moved quickly. She gave me the news of the diagnosis on a Thursday, and I had an appointment that Friday with Dr. Lannan. Sensing my distress and anxiety over the diagnosis, coupled with the recent death of my mother, Dr. Lannan also moved quickly to alleviate what fear he could and scheduled me for a lumpectomy that Monday. I was then introduced to my oncologist, Dr. Kenneth Miller at the Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Joanne Wheathouse, who would become my radiation oncologist. I am fortunate. Dr. Miller and the wonderful nursing staff at the Yale Cancer Center got me through the entire ordeal, healthy, well, and feeling fabulous.
This survivor story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline, and this is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here in the WTIC studios with our guest, Dr. Gary Friedlander, an expert in the detection and treatment of sarcoma here at the Yale Cancer Center. Gary, before the break, we were talking about some of the new innovative strategies for amputation of patients with bone sarcoma. Kind of in the remaining time that we have left, maybe you could highlight for our listeners some of the advances that are taking place right here at the Cancer Center.
Absolutely. I think at the top of the list would be our continuing participation in national trials where, with other groups of outstanding oncologists, we are exploring new approaches all the time in a rigorous scientific manner where we develop good information and we know whether things work better or not. Secondly, here we have an absolutely outstanding group of bone biologists. In fact, we in orthopedics have more NIH funding in our research activity than any other institution in the country. And I'm very proud of that. And these scientists are expert at understanding how cells of the musculoskeletal system work normally and unraveling the mysteries of how they behave when they turn malignant and ways to manipulate them back to doing what we prefer. We also have a very strong bioengineering unit, collaborates with our colleagues on other parts of campus where we understand how to design better implants the other way to replace parts of the skeleton, the metals and the plastics.
Just on that point, Gary, and following up on our discussion before the break, you know, are there any long-term consequences of patients who've had, you know, prostheses? And does one need to worry about having that part being replaced sometime down the road?
Yes, is a simple answer. Just like having a hip or a knee replaced for arthritis, we now have special prostheses for replacing segments of bone after tumors. They are cemented in place. They work really well, very quickly. The rehabilitation is short, as opposed to the allografts, the cadaver bones. But they do loosen over time. These are young people. We want them to be active. We want them back at work, at school, at leisure. And every 15, 20 years, perhaps, they do have to be re-cemented, and they can be.
And obviously, it would seem that physical therapy and rehab therapy should be a very important component of the treatment approach to these patients.
You're absolutely correct.
So, and what do we provide here at the Yale Cancer Center with respect to those services?
We, I think, are outstanding at a spectrum of support needs. Some people call these ancillary services. I think that belies their critical importance. From social services and psychological support groups to physical therapists, occupational therapists that can help design and monitor muscle strengthening programs.
And of course, I'll put a plug for my good friend and co-host, Dr. Ken Miller. He's heading our survivorship clinic, and obviously I think the services that he's hoping to provide also would encompass your patients with sarcoma. If you have questions for Dr. Gary Friedlander for Healthline, we encourage you to go to our website, that's yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the sources available to you. Before we sign off, Gary, what are the key take-home messages that you'd like to share with our listeners about sarcomas?
Lumps and bumps are very, very common, and they're usually harmless, but you have to be your own advocate. You have to be aware of these changes when they occur, and should bring these to the attention of your primary care physician to help sort those out. And when suspected or concerning, referred to people that understand both the benign and the malignant natures of lumps. The second message is we have some outstanding solutions to some very difficult problems today. When I started, the survivorship for osteosarcoma was 10%. Today, it's 80 to 90%. I'm very pleased, and I'm excited about the future.
Great. Well, Gary, it's been great having you, and we hope to hear more from you in the future. I'd like to thank Dr. Gary Friedlander for joining us today on Healthline. And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will feature Dr. Jack Van Hoff discussing the issues surrounding pediatric oncology. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.